The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
April is Earth Month. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
It's just dirty. The Earth is dirty.
Well, I'm looking forward to the annual Earth Day tire fire.
Leave the Earth alone.
I'm still going to therapy because I'm Mother Earth.
What about Benghazi, Mr. President?
The whales are trying to take my guns.
Jupiter gets 3 months because it's fat.
I like rare Earth. Twiddly deep,
twiddly dumb. What about Earth, Wind, and Fire Month?
Well, I like my oldies all the time.
K-Earth 101.
It's been 301 billion years, and I'm still putting 300 billion years on my check.
When is it Earth Tone Month?
Hey, everybody, how about a moon day?
Oh my God!
People are raping the planet. But, you know, look what it's wearing.
Welcome to the Corporate Training Program managed by Evans Resources. Enter your password and username. Congratulations! You have successfully entered your password and username. Not everyone does. Now, a numerical code is being sent to your cell phone. Enter it here. Now create a password which will never be used again and which serves no purpose. In order to ensure your security, enter your mother's maiden name. What is the name of your first pet? What is your greatest disappointment? Have you ever experienced love? If you did not seize that moment, explain why. Enter this code to prove you're not a robot. You have successfully entered the code, but so could a robot. Pick a number between 1 and 6. Try again. Try again. Try again. Try again. Try again. You have tried all the numbers and none of them work. Tap one key on your keyboard at random. You have a 1 in 78 chance of getting the right one. Remember that password you made up that you're never supposed to use again. Use it now. You have entered the training module, a transcendent plateau that you had always imagined existed beyond the firewall. Here is a beauty so bright and full that your eyes cannot bear it. You have no want or desire. In some forgotten place in your dreams, you have always known this place. For the first time, you are exactly where you are supposed to be, in perfect stillness. You have enjoyed paradise for too long, and your sign-in has timed out. Please enter your password and username.
And now, a sneak preview of the all-new Full House Revival.
Hey, DJ!
Kimmy, what are you doing here?
What do you mean? What am I doing here? Aren't I always at the Tanner House?
Yeah, but it's 2015, and we're, like, middle-aged.
I know, but DJ, didn't you hear? Full House is coming back.
What? Are you serious? You mean coming back, coming back?
The whole kit and caboodle, exclusively on Netflix.
My dad will be so excited. Now he can say pussy as many times as he wants to.
And now that you're older, he can finally have sex with you.
Oh. Kimmy, stop! You're making me blush.
And Stephanie can finally do meth on screen as well as off. Hey, I heard that! It's true, Steph. You're a big old meth addict, and the whole world knows it. How rude!
How about Michelle?
Which Michelle? The anorexic or the cokehead?
Oh, there's a difference. Silly me. I thought they were identical.
Common mistake.
An older version of me. Is she perverted like me? Would she go down on you in a theater? Does she speak eloquently? And would she have your baby? I'm sure she'd make a really excellent mother.
What's that? That's Uncle Jesse making fun of Uncle Joey.
Hey, hey, hey!
Uncle Jesse!
Hey, I'm not just making fun of Uncle Joey. I'm teaching him a very important lesson. One that you should all remember. You should never, ever break up with someone who gives you a blowjob in a movie theater, no matter how toothy or dykey they may be.
That's so true, Uncle Jesse. I'll remember that forever and always.
They were on a one-way trip to hell with drugs, sex, no tomorrow, and their only code was live fast and die young. Except, they didn't die young. So now they're in their 40s, and they look awful.
I don't think about tomorrow, Doc.
Yes, well, that's why you're morbidly obese.
So what? We all might die tomorrow.
One of us might.
They dared everything, because they cared about nothing except the thrill of the moment.
Hey, Johnny, what are you rebelling against?
What do you got?
An enlarged prostate. What do you got?
Some kind of kidney thing?
A sin-streaked story of today's lost generation.
What's your game?
A little of this, a little of that.
On the hustle, huh?
Something like that. I work for Uber.
That doesn't sound like a hustle.
Shut up. Hand me that pie.
See the exciting new movie, Live Fast, Die Middle-Aged.
Tom Carden.
Yes, welcome to Boober. The app-assisted car network.
Yeah, I'm going to Battery Park City, North End Avenue, and I need you to...
I know your destination, sir.
Oh, okay, good. Is that your hack license?
Yes, sir.
Weird name. Zeno of Alea.
It's Greek. Ancient.
Yeah, okay, Zeno. Pedal to the metal, okay? I'm late.
We're already halfway there, sir.
Wow, really? That was fast.
That's Booba for you.
I like Boober. Late model Lexus, courteous driver.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you, Zeno of Alea. We're making great time. Be there any minute, right?
Paradoxically, sir, we're still only halfway.
What?
This is the city. Over 84% of its citizens are influenced by user-generated content, but a lot of the times they're like, and I'm like, and it's like, you know, and they're all like, oh my God. When that happens, I go to work. I carry an iPhone 6 Plus.
The New Millennials.
It was Monday, March 18th. It was trendy in Los Angeles with a humidity level of 2%. We were working the day watch out of the retro facial hair division. Our boss is Troy. My partner is Crystal. He spells it with a C-H. My name is Crystal, but spelled with a K. We got like a text. It was Troy. He wanted to see us in his ergonomic workspace. You wanted some FaceTime?
Really stoked to see you dudes. Take a look at this PowerPoint presentation. Somebody tweeted a tip that a vintage clothing store in Echo Park was being run by a group of young influencers with trust funds. I need your verbiage. Crystal?
Well, I think we should.
I was asking Crystal.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. No problem. Just give me your input.
Well, I...
No, I was talking to Crystal.
What?
I was talking to Crystal.
Oh, with a K?
After failing to yield actionable ideation, we decided to Uber over to the vintage clothing store. Once there, we found nothing out of the ordinary, except for one important detail. One of them was talking about taking it to the next level without a mission statement.
Hi, welcome to Flounce. My name is Jared. How may I maximate your offline experience?
I'm Crystal. This is my partner, Crystal. We're here to ask you a few questions.
May I inquire how you heard about our establishment? Tumblr, Reddit, BuzzFeed?
Never mind that. Are you the thought leader of this limited liability company?
Nice Van Dyke, dude.
Thanks, I'm totes slamming it.
Answer the question.
I like to think I potentiate maximumative ideators to within 110% of influencer estimations. So yeah, why?
Your mission statement. How come it's not displayed on your otherwise sick website?
I don't need one. I don't care about profit.
Don't care about profit? How do you leverage brand fuel engagers?
I'm in this business for the love of it. You don't know what love is.
Unless you're talking about embiggeting influencer estimations, punk. I don't have an app for that.
I'm afraid we're going to have to slam Flounce on social media for not having a mission statement.
I can't change your mind about thought influencing across a multi-platformed media sock.
Sorry, we already tweeted it.
Fine. One thing I don't get. Isn't Crystal a chick's name?
Dude, no. Not when you spell it with a C-H.
Okay. Anybody want to listen to Drake while having butt sex?
On March 22nd, a TED Talk was held in Long Beach, California. In a moment, the results of that talk. The limited liability company Flounce was found guilty of taking it to the next level without a mission statement. It was subsequently slammed on social media.
Edition Radio Hour. We'll be right back.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
You eat your caviar straight out of the tin because you're keeping it real. You wear bespoke Armani suits with red socks because you've got a great sense of humor. You have 50,000 and absolutely no sense of shame.
Oh, Benton, I don't know what to do. I'm middle-aged, I'm rich, I have a butler.
You most certainly do, sir.
But people think I'm out of touch and not down with the kids.
A conundrum, indeed, sir.
Then you should check out the new Rolls-Royce Rolls-Royce Phantom SUV.
Wait, so it's a Rolls-Royce, but it's also an SUV.
That would appear to be the case, sir.
All the classic design styling you need to show people that you're very rich and important. And all the tricked out, pimped up swagger you want to show people that you still know how to party.
Yeah, I like it.
It is excessively fly, sir.
Sleek lines that whisper, I'm a sophisticate. Growling all-terrain tires that bellow, let's blow this joint. Pump up the DMX, pick up a couple of hookers, and go shoot cans in the desert. Heritage that asserts quiet luxury. And LED downlit chrome rims that scream, I tried coke one time in college. One of my friends probably has a gun. You don't know me, man.
Wow. That sounds perfect.
Fat, sir. Decidedly fat.
So sit back and appreciate the hand-stitched leather interior. Then turn up the double trouble bass sound system with a beat that'll vibrate the cum right off your balls, you badass motherfucker. Also comes with multiple cup holders.
You have multiple cup holders? Well, hello, daddy.
Just make sure she doesn't cream up the leather.
All right. I'll take one.
You won't regret it. The new Rolls-Royce SUV. More expensive than an Asian mistress, cheaper than a divorce.
Well, at first when I met Allison on G-Harmony, we didn't get along at all.
I was neat. He was sloppy.
I loved a typical male thing like sports. She loved a typical female thing like opera.
But it turns out that he was the foreman for the old silver mine my uncle left me.
And then we had to work together to fend off her evil cousin Bob.
Oh, that Bob.
At G-Harmony, we give you the kind of romance you find in a kid's movie. No sex and no intimacy issues, just movie references, action sequences, a vaguely Christian subtext, and a duck driving a motorcycle.
If we get out of this alive, will you marry me?
I'll marry you whether we get out alive or not!
Whoa!
Get the love story you always expected when you were a kid at G-Harmony.
Up to the attic dark I snook, pulled back the curtain on the hook,
and searched in every little nook until one day I found a book. A book I found. I found a book. Come over here and take a look. By Dr. Seuss, a brand new book, which to the publisher I took. What will it say? How will it look? Oh, happy day, a brand new book. A brand new book, a book, I said. By Dr. Seuss, who's sadly dead. But his rough notes are better yet than all the books I usually get. A brand new book, I bet it's funny. I bet it makes a ton of money. Those pictures in that graphic style, those mop-haired kids who make me smile. And oh, the rhymes, those rhymes that chime and sing and climb and ring and rhyme. I'll find a chair and on it sit and read the book up every bit. And so I watch and so I wait to pay my cash to his estate. And so I wait and so I look to gaze upon the brand new book.
Jesus fucking Christ, Zeno of Alea! What kind of driver training they give cabbies in Alea? We've been going an hour and a half and we're still not in Battery Park City! Christ, we must have been all over Manhattan!
I took the most direct route, a straight line.
Yeah, then why the fuck aren't we there yet? How much further, you Greek moron?
I'm afraid to say, sir, we're still only halfway there.
Ah! Fuck! Boomer sucks!
A new Japanese game show features male contestants being given hand jobs by a young woman as they attempt to sing karaoke. We at the Final Edition Radio Hour would like to roundly condemn this show for not going nearly far enough, as we proudly present Celebrity Handjob Karaoke.
Hello, and welcome to Celebrity Strokes, the game show where we see how your favorite celebrities handle, well, being handled. With me, as always, is our celebrity strokes model, Mika. How are we doing today, Mika?
Oh no, I've got severe carpal tunnel syndrome. Not. I'm ready for whatever comes.
Well, let's get right to our first celebrity. Appropriately enough, he's the good hands guy himself. Please welcome the Allstate Insurance spokesman dude.
My name is Dennis Haysbert, and I have a long and distinguished film and television career.
I'm sure you do. Now, let's have Mika jack you off as you do your pitch for Allstate Insurance. Both of you, ready, set, go!
1931 was not exactly a great year to start a business. Times were hard, so hard. But that's when Allstate Insurance opened their doors. And in the decades since, we've been there. Whether it's auto, home, life, oh Jesus fucking Christ, yes! We've have you covered, yes! Are you in good hands? Call your Allstate agent today and see what they can do for you.
Sheer utter professionalism. You delivered a sales pitch and a creamy load simultaneously. That's gonna be hard to, beat. But here's our next contestant. Are we ready?
I need a wet nap.
In the meantime, let me introduce one of the finest actors of our time. Please welcome stage and screen legend, Sir Ian McKellen.
Thank you. I'd say it was a pleasure to be here, but I'm not that good an actor.
Well, let's get going before you think this is over. Sir Ian, you'll be performing as Richard III while Mika whacks you off. On your marks, you two. Ready, set, go!
Ah, yes, Mika. I don't know if anyone bothered to Google me, but there seems to be a slight casting problem. I might have been better off with a... Well, you certainly are an enthusiastic young woman.
I love Lord of the Rings.
And I am an actor, and this is for charity.
No, it's not.
In any case, why not go along? I'll just close my eyes and think of England. Or Tom Hiddleston.
The line, Sir Ian. Richard III.
Of course. Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by the sun of York. Miss, could you play with my balls a bit with your other hand? You'd make an old man very happy. Ah, oh, ah, oh, where were we? Ah, oh, yes, in the deep bosom of the ocean buried, bruised at arms, stern alarms, yada, 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 dreadful marches, dreadful measures, vapors nimbly, ladies, chamber, ah, oh, ah. Oh. Listen to this, pleasing of a lute. And scene?
Beautiful! And in iambic pentameter the entire time!
Sir Ian, will you sign this tissue?
Certainly not.
Because there's no time! Here's our final contestant. He's the poet of his generation. Please welcome Bob Dylan.
What's going on? This isn't Coachella.
It's better. Mika's gonna jack you off while you sing Blowing in the Wind.
Well, let's do it. How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas?
Oh my God, Mika, slow down.
I haven't started yet.
The answer, my friend.
He's not holding a harmonica.
Oh, it's coming from his pants.
We have to go! Join us next week when our guests are Carrot Top, some guy from The Bachelor, and Pee Wee Herman.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
On January 7th of this year, masked cowards with guns murdered or wounded 21 unarmed editors of, and contributors to, Charlie Hebdo magazine for the crime of being funny at the expense of their, the gunman's, grotesque perversion of Islam. The event shocked the world, but especially its satirists, who all over the world held tributes and memorials to their dead comrades. One of these, Stand Up for Charlie, was held at the Ethical Society of New York 2 weeks later. A panel including our own Tony Hendra, Bob Mankoff of The New Yorker, and Joe Raiola, editor of Mag Magazine, then had a free-ranging on the role and limits of satire in modern society. Here's part two of that debate, which still resonates.
You know, this is a very progressive pope that we have now. He's very progressive. He's for gay rights and wants to loosen up on birth control and bring the church into the, at least the 20th century, which would be about time. But when it comes to this issue, he made a statement a couple of days after, which is, it's not okay. It's not okay to make fun of one's faith. And I thought, oh, really? Really? So the pythons shouldn't have made Life of Brian. George Carlin, I mentioned George again because he's my comedy hero, shouldn't have told us how to reduce the Ten Commandments from 10 to 2. And Bill Maher should just shut up. And I thought about that statement. What's not, he didn't say, but what can be inferred is they got what was coming to them.
Right.
Exactly. They got what was coming to them. And I thought, you know, Jesus may forgive you for that remark. But I won't.
No. I don't think he would say that they got what was coming to them.
It's implied, though.
But, I don't think so. But you can take
that. It's good
that
to at least disagree one thing for
but,
the Pope.
But to your point, though, I feel like the major religions have made a pact with each other because, on the face of it, the claims are absurd that we won't make fun of each other. But the puzzling thing about the thing about criticizing religion is basically we can criticize everything for which there are facts and evidence. The one thing that we're not allowed to question is the thing for which there's no facts.
Right.
And evidence. Right.
And essentially our cartoon characters.
Yeah, so there's no facts.
Let me just get to Anne, because I don't want to leave out, but okay. You represent, of course, ethical culture and the humanist perspective. And by the way, you probably would agree that many people in religion aren't the funniest people, but you are.
Well, the fact that people don't tell jokes about ethical culture makes us feel kind of sad, because you know that Garrison Keillor tells jokes about Unitarians. And until they make jokes about us, we're just not there.
Yeah.
But I have to say that, court jesters play a very important role, because they always spoke truth to power. And so I think that's a very important aspect of that. And I also want to say that my favorite cartoon in The New Yorker was when there are a number of women sitting around the living room, and one turns to the other and says, you know, she's promiscuous. She belongs to 5 other book groups. and that's, so I am. But at any rate, I think there was a lot of controversy. I can't give you the humanist perspective, because there are so many humanists. And although many people don't know who or what humanism is, I like to say that some people start off as atheists because they're rejecting a lot. And then when they realize that rejection shouldn't be their only identity, they kind of blossom into humanism, because they realize that there's a whole lot more to being a human being. And we've been having a lot of controversy online and also within this community about free speech, what's appropriate, what's not. And although ethical culture and humanism doesn't have the sacred scriptures that other faiths do, one of my favorite members once said that she thought that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was the humanist sacred text. And so if we take that as sort of our ideals and our aspirations, we know that those articles conflict sometimes. And a good example is about Charlie Hebdo and all of the controversy that's come out of that, because we have in Article 1 the ideal, the aspiration, that every human being has worth and dignity, and that we are to treat every other human being with respect as our brothers and sisters. Okay, we read on. And then we see Article 19. That we all should have freedom of expression. And in all of its forms, freedom of speech, freedom of expression. Well, how do we square those things? Well, what I think is that we have a whole lot of ideals and a whole lot of aspirations. And where the rubber hits the road is in our practice. And so we as humanists, and not just only humanists, obviously other faith traditions as well, develop different practices in terms of how do we put those ideals and aspirations, how do we make them real. And so what I think is important for all of us, and I love some of the ideas that people suggested, smoking a lot of pot until we say, why do I hate you? That sounds like a good start. But another part of it, I think, is nonviolent communication, developing compassionate language, understanding the roots of human morality, forgiveness, what is forgiveness? Appreciative inquiry, which is something that we talk a lot about here. Looking for those things that we have in common.
Aren't you forgetting humor?
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Oh, my goodness. In fact, I'll tell you a story about ethical culture. There was a fraternity of leaders before there were women leaders, and sometimes the guys would argue. And so one of our early leaders, John Lovejoy Elliott, would always come into the room, and he would tell a joke. And that was the way that he got all of the guys to settle down and start talking with each other. So absolutely.
Now, you're mad as far as – does have a younger audience, I guess.
The mad audience is a little weirder than you would expect. A third of our readers are over 30.
Huh?
And I guess the other two-thirds of our readers are what you would expect. Younger, mostly male. Thing about Mad, of course, Mad always presents itself as cheap and stupid, but anyone who reads Mad knows Mad is very smart. It's got a sharp political edge and body fluid humor as well. that's what we do. But I'll tell you, something you said I picked up on, and I was glad to hear, the importance of talking about this in conversation and debating it. We couldn't help but take this somewhat personally at MAD. We are a humor magazine, after all. There are only 9 of us on staff. This attack in Paris was timed very well. It was during an editorial meeting.
Right.
And we're in an editorial meeting, and we're all satirists and humorists. And we had to, start talking. What should we do? How should we respond? What's the appropriate way to respond? We fought about it and argued about it for 24 hours. And it was interesting to me, and that kind of refreshing for me to hear, that at Charlie Hebdo, that they argued too. That they actually, had conversations in that staff about how far to push the envelope. I get asked sometimes, well, where's the line? Well, no one knows where the line is. The line's always changing and shifting anyway. And every comedian wants to find it and annihilate it and cross it. Of course, So
why?
Why? Because
why do you want to? I mean, I want to take a slightly contrarian view here. Why do you want to violate it and cross it?
Because
all the time?
Because that's where the joke is.
Not always.
Frequently.
Sometimes yes, and sometimes.
It's not the job of the satirist to make people feel comfortable.
No, but I want to take a slightly contrarian view here about humor, about what it, you know, Peter Cook, Dudley Moore Peter Cook, who's talked about satire. And, you know, the great quote is, he loved satire because it was so powerful. Looked at what all those clever Berlin cafes did to prevent the rise of Hitler. You know, people say, well, comedy and tragedy, two sides of the coin. Well, actually, the way I look at it, not taking David Brooks' side really, is basically I see a six-sided die. Five sides are actually seriousness. It's how life is led. It's sort of the default condition. And there's one side that sort of makes the other five tolerable, which is humor. But humor itself, you know, now we have this panel where we're subtracting some value from the $40 that they paid by the wonderful humor. And it's not all jokes, right? We're actually, at a certain point, when Jon Stewart, you know, does the great routine about Jim Cramer and all the stocks he has. But when Cramer comes on the show, it's not all jokes. So at a certain point, to me, humor opens up the discussion. But it's not actually the answer to the problems, because then you actually need real answers to the problems.
Although it does diffuse tensions.
I really couldn't disagree more.
Yeah.
I think that Seth, what, is that funny?
That's good. That's what it's all about.
That's what this evening's all about.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think...
I changed my mind.
But I think satire can change minds. I really do. And guns never do. I mean, guns just drive people back into whatever it is that the guns were picked up for in the first place.
I think satire fires up the minds that are already on the one side, most part.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't think it changes minds. I think it can. I don't say, to some extent, it's an empirical question. I don't know, you know, it's sort of like elections. There's one side and the other side, and for the most part, the humor is pretty much directed here one way. And maybe... If you do it with nuance and stuff, people sort of on the fence, people on the other side can change, and I don't deny the use of it.
But I want to follow, because I would agree with you, and I think in the past too, the way we look at humor has changed. I mean, I do political humor, and it didn't used to be like people sitting like this. I think you had people like Mark Russell and people like that, and maybe it was there was a sense that I see that point, and we've become so polarized, and even in just the way we take in information. Liberals watch MSNBC. People watch the news they agree with. And even the way we get news, I still get the Times delivered, because it's a different process than going on and clicking what you're interested in. You know, something on page 16, a little article, might be something you really should know about. So do you think the way that – and is America different still than France and the rest of Europe in the way we look at humor and satire? And are we getting just softer in general, where we don't want to hear anything that challenges us?
Well, I think that's kind of the point of what we're talking about here. I mean, it's to go back to your point, the essential issue with Charlie Hebdo is about freedom of speech, and it relates directly to what Pope Frankie said, which is that we must not provoke, we must respect faith. Those were the two things he said that I could not disagree with more. I think that we have an absolute right to respect anyone's desire to believe in any kind of man-invented religious twaddle they want to believe in.
Absolutely.
Okay? But we have absolutely no obligation to respect what they believe, especially when what they believe is deeply offensive. Well, they're more offensive than I am in offending them.
Right. I've been told, but let's pay... Let.
I mean...
Let's pose a difficult problem about...
No, but I haven't quite finished.
Oh, go ahead.
Because,
go ahead.
I mean, have you ever actually worn a burqa?
As a matter of fact, I sort of cross-dress every once in a while, and you can't believe what a turn-on.
I mean, this seems to me to be the main issue. It's not just a question of blasphemy and so forth. The main issue is the degradation of women by practically every Islamic society in the world. And I actually put on a burqa the other day, and we're at the final edition is shooting a pilot for a web series, which was a wacky 80s comedy, you know, with a laugh track and everything, yeah. about a family of terrorists. And, yes, why not? And so the daughters in this particular thing were both wearing burkas, and these are the real deal, right? I mean, to the floor with the male slot, you know, in the top. And I put one of them on, just to, for the hell of it, for a joke, and it was incredible. It was like a jail cell made of cloth with just one little thing you could see out of. You couldn't see anything. It was completely dark. I mean, and I'm actually a terrible claustrophobe, and I had to get that thing off. I had to get out of that damn thing. But I just was thinking what it must be like to live your entire life in a jail cell made of cloth. And that's the kind of issue that we're dealing with here.
That gets to your point, though, okay, in that it absolutely makes no sense to respect every human being based on simply does it make sense to respect the guy who's chopping off the journalist's head? How does it make sense?
Well, I also respectfully disagree with your position, and that is, bear in mind that there are different types of anything from the headscarf to the full-blown burqa. And my Muslim friends who are women who don't wear, you know, with a male slot, as you refer to it, but who wear a modified version of it, their perspective is that they feel safer in that, because so often, and you
especially
perhaps,
in Manhattan.
Well, and you perhaps don't know this, because as a man, people don't catcall. Maybe they do. But, you know, women of a certain age, I'd say certainly throughout my 20s, with something, you know, once I was pregnant, I didn't get it anymore. But every woman, I think, has a story about being harassed on the street, in the classroom, everywhere. So my friends who are
Freedom
Muslim
speech.
Women who wear this, who wear the garb, not the full-blown perhaps, but you
Why
know,
not
modified
the full
version,
blown?
They feel safer. What? They feel safer. So I'm just saying.
And they could date Hasidic men.
But again, let's not take a position that's extreme.
Well, I think it's not a choice in those countries.
Well,
I
would
choice.
Say just to bring it out, because we do have to start one down. Wouldn't you all agree, though, that this is religious extremism? We could all have problems with, and that. Again, to the misconception of other people, is what Charlie Hebdo attacked. Not the ordinary person,
for sure.
Who, whatever they want to believe. That's you know, Charlie Hebdo goes after the rich, the powerful, the not the oppressed, and that's the misconception. Again, and we are all entitled to have whatever view.
And I agree
or
it's a matter of choice.
And we should make fun of atheists and humanists and everybody.
But you can't sweep everything under the rug. You can't have a large portion of a population using a religion. Not just a few people. It's not just a few extremists. It's not just a few outliers. It's a large. It's for this type of thing. If there's six people on the street and it's 1,000 people, but six people have those guns, you have a problem. So there is a problem going on with how this religion is being interpreted by a lot of people. We actually have a real problem. So it's obfuscation when the spokesman for Obama says they're going to have a conference on extremism, but they're not going to mention Islam.
But I would say, and then, because we could debate this a lot, that I don't think that there is such a thing as a Muslim terrorist, because Islam doesn't say anything about terrorism. So I think you're a murderer. I think that's a terrorist, I think, is a ridiculous
that's nuts.
Word. And whether it's state terrorism, whether, you know, when the United States, by the way, killed 17 Serbian journalists under Bill Clinton,
they're
no one is outraged about that. And they were journalists. So Noam Chomsky should read about this. There's many, many cases of
look,
that.
Look, let's just agree you're wrong.
Yeah. No. Well,
this is, and of course, this is why the Pope is really wrong when he says that religion somehow deserves, any religion, deserves some kind of papal special dispensation. And we're allowed to satirize everything except, we're allowed to turn a critical eye toward everything except monotheism in particular. It's very convenient for the Pope.
Yeah, well, we're going to, I mean, I'd love to, we could talk, oh, each of you we could spend an hour with, but in closing, what just again, it's only 2 weeks, and of course, Charlie Hebdo, sadly, except for all of you and all of you, it's sadly receding from media attention because Anderson Cooper is somewhere else now, live. you know, where
nothing's happening. It's a 24-minute news cycle.
And so how do we keep alive George Walensky and all the wonderful people who he lost, and how do we move that legacy forward? How are each of you planning on doing that?
Well, the issue seems to be images of Muhammad, and I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is that it would be fascinating to me if the Prophet Muhammad did actually come back to Earth. And for 1,400 years, this guy has... No one has ever painted a picture of him. No one has ever made a statue of him. And this guy's obviously got a big ego. No? I mean, he must have. But 1,400 years, it's just blank screen. And so I think if he did come back and he had an iPhone, he'd be everywhere taking selfies.
Yeah, right.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back. And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
I'm Tony Hendro.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And we want to talk to you about the hardcore satire we do on the Final Edition Radio Hour.
It's not just satire, Tony. It's parody, ridicule, caricature, lampoon, burlesque, banter, mockery, spoofs.
Oh, I guess, and it's also pastiche, pasquinade, with some persiflage and raillery thrown in.
The Final Edition is a big tent, Tony.
We do satire. Satire hurts. All that other stuff just tickles.
Jonathan Swift once said a little satire goes a long way.
No, he didn't. That was Aristophanes.
Actually, it was David Brooks.
We do satire because satire can bring down empires.
Oh, right, like Colbert's satire of Bush at the White House Correspondents' Dinner ended the war in Iraq.
You're just being a bitch, man.
What we do on the Final Edition Radio Hour is make the good people laugh any which way. Do you disagree, Tony?
No, I guess not.
Okay, so listen to...
The Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now, 60 Minutes.
Hello, I'm Scott Pelley. Today's report is such that if you have small children, now would be a good time to get them out of the room. If you have bigger children, now would be a good time to get them out of the room. If you have children medium-sized through extra-large, now would be a good time to get them out of the room. If your children are wrinkled, retired senior citizens... Now would be a good time to get them out of the room. The important thing is that there be no children in the room, and that the time for getting them out is now. This is an important principle, as well as a well-worn news cliché. Now, since the beginning of this report, 99% of you have not gotten your small children out of the room. Since I started talking, 76% of you have brought new small children into the room. All I can say... is that if you've brought new small children into the room, now would be a good time to get them out. I'll wait.
Scott Pelley will be right back with his report. If you have small children, you might want to have them leave the room.
Boober?
This is the Boober car service. Time and space for bodies in motion.
So I tweeted this Vine of Alan twerking in his Paisley jockeys, and it went viral. I know. Sick, right?
At Boober, the correlation between the individual and his or her social experience is fundamental to our philosophy of dialogue.
Excuse me, I'm talking on my iPhone.
I, too, have an iPhone.
Oh, my God. Ask me if I give a shit.
Except for you, my iPhone is a thou phone. While for me, your iPhone is my thou phone.
Oh, I get it. You're trying to make a funny about Martin Buber's reduction of relations between persons and inanimate objects to the three expressive signifiers, I, you, and it.
Correct. What a joy to finally transport one who comprehends.
Right. Except in this case, I do not perceive the relational structure of the elemental variables between us as I, thou. Okay? I perceive it as I, it. All right? Now take me the meat packing and go down the highway.
And now Jim Rowe with an obituary of another real dead person.
Rudy R. Perz, creator of the Pillsbury Doughboy. Advertising whiz Rudy R. Perz, creator of the iconic Pillsbury Doughboy, pinched his final loaf this week after failing frantically to pop a fresh breadstick. Upon hearing the news, Liz Nordley, president of Pillsbury, released a statement saying, quote, "We paid that man off years ago. We owe him nothing." Under pressure to produce a mascot representing bleached flour, thiamine, mononitrate, sodium acid, pyrophosphate, aluminum, and yeast, Perz created his first three-dimensional doughboy doll of clay in 1965 at the cost of $16,000, or roughly what you'd pay a surgeon to remove half your large intestine. The pudgy man of dough became such a hit, Brian Wilson once cited it as his main motivation behind releasing Pet Sounds. To distinguish the doughboy from the actual rows of dough, Perz gave it a blush, a scarf, a chef's hat, two big blue eyes, and a warm chuckle. As for the penis, it gets amputated every time you slam the can against a kitchen table. When the first doughboy was filmed using stop motion, it came as a shock to many Pennsylvanians who originally thought it might be the ghost of Rick Santorum's dead fetus. His chuckle of hee-hee when poked in the stomach became his trademark, after other catchphrases were rejected, including, "No, please, no," when someone bit off his head, and "What the heck?" when repeatedly poked in the ass. Perz requested his body be stuffed into a small cardboard cylinder.
Welcome, Santa Cruz chapter of Friends of the Humpback Whale, to another of our whale spotting voyages off the beautiful Central California coast.
Hi. Good
to see you. Of course, we all know and love the legendary Songs of the Humpback Whale.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But you know, what are far less known and in their way just as beautiful are the farts of the humpback whale.
Really?
Oh, wow.
There's one of the lovely creatures now. Perhaps we'll get lucky. Unlike the humpback's songs, which can only be heard underwater, its farts are quite audible at sea level. You see, they come up to the surface to fart.
Well, I suppose that's some rudimentary form of courtesy to other whales.
That's a pretty thought. Oh, there she blows!
Is that a spout?
Like a spout. It's hot air becoming vapor ahead of the actual fart. With luck, we're about to hear one.
Will we be able to smell it, too?
The farts of the humpback whale do not smell. Oh, hark!
That is so haunting.
I know. The richness, the profound power. It's like a mighty organ of the sea.
Well, it comes from an organ.
To me, it speaks volumes.
It's sure releasing volumes.
Greg, stop being a smartass. You're spoiling it for people.
There's another spout.
I always thought the spout came from its blowhole.
It's just a different blowhole.
The sheer majesty of it is mind-blowing.
What happens if you light one of their farts?
Actually, humpback whale farts are so powerful, you can light them underwater.
Wow. Has anyone ever done that?
Yeah. There's a group of scuba divers in Malibu dedicated to lighting humpback whale farts underwater. They call themselves the California Fast-Moving Fart Patrol. Oh, look. A whole pod of whales approaching our boat.
Oh, they're coming quite close. How beautiful they are.
Do humpback whales communicate by farting?
Yes, one will fart and another will fart back. Listen.
Why are they surrounding us with their tails towards us?
By turning their backs, they're showing their trust in us fellow mammals. It's a gesture of peace and friendship.
Oh, man, do you smell that? That is freaking...
friggin' toxic. Something died inside that whale.
Hey, I told you, humpback whale farts are odorless.
Yeah? Well, don't light a match.
I hate to say this, but I think they're farting at us.
It's a whale fraternity, a gesture of fraternal flatulence.
Really? I thought these majestic animals were above this kind of sophomoric humor.
Oh, Lord. Krill farts are the worst.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Abby Parker, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lank, Leslie Shapira, Kurt Weitzman, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.